Chapter 7, Saboteur. Summary. Previously on Epistaxis Anime, the boys celebrated Matt's birthday, and Foggy got them matching Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles action figures. Also, Matt visited Linda Peretti and found out there's a cure to his Epistaxis Anime, sleeping with the person he's been repressing his feelings for. Matt emerged, yet again, his shirt collar symptomatically damp from the splash of water to his face that each of his pep talks required from the bathroom. Tonight was the night. He was going to tell Foggy. Coincidentally, the night before had also been the night. And it had been going well, too, until Robert from next door had threatened to come back with a pair of dirty socks to jam down their throats if they couldn't keep their laughter down to a manageable level while he was finishing up his paper. Unfortunately, that just wasn't the mood Matt had been aiming for, so he'd postponed it for the third time since his sojourn to Queens because, no, Matt couldn't catch a break, thanks for asking. If Foggy wasn't coming down with food poisoning, Todd was organizing a less dire but no less disruptive residence hall meeting. There was always something. And the more somethings that piled up, the more agitated Matt grew. Now that there was nothing standing in his way, and please don't bring up Marcy, Matt refused to go there lest he spiral. He felt that if he didn't confess his feelings soon, he was going to pop, like a balloon, filled with blood. "You all right?" Foggy asked as Matt came back into the room, his fist balled in determination. "You're carrying a lot of tension in your shoulders there, buddy." Matt gave himself a shake. "Must be the Dixon assignment. I've been putting it off," he lied. He went over to his bed and flopped down on it, hoping to be the picture of nonchalance, striving to emit an agenda-less aura. He listened to Foggy's keyboard keys clack for a bit, wondering how to begin. Each of the conversations he'd rehearsed in his head went differently, and always, always, it seemed there was room for improvement. Sometimes he'd lead with the truth about his Epistaxis anime, and the Foggy he'd dreamed up alternated through pity, anger, and disgust. Other times, he'd tell Foggy he was the most beautiful thing he'd ever not seen, and Foggy laughed it off like a joke. Matt just had to hope reality would be more forgiving. Foggy's chair creaked as he leaned back to peer at Matt from his desk. "Dude, seriously, you've got to breathe." "I am breathing," Matt huffed. "Well, you look like a corpse." Matt couldn't help but crack a smile as he rolled onto his side. "The only rigor I have is academic," he said carefully. A laugh caught in Foggy's throat. Convincing argument to be making from a bed. He turned around fully in his chair, folding his arms over the backrest. "Okay, what's really on your mind? Spill." "It's nothing," Matt said instinctively. His fingers found the corner of his sheet to play with. This was it. Foggy had given him the floor. All he had to do was bare his soul, a thing he couldn't recall ever having done in his life, but which other people did all the time, right? It shouldn't be that hard. Especially not after so many pep talks and as many aborted attempts. It should have flowed right out of him. "Foggy, he began, but it didn't seem right. His voice was too shaky, his posture too unserious. He wrinkled his nose and sat up, gripping the edge of the mattress with both hands, hard. His shoulders were up near his ears. He tried again. "Do you ever think you might explode if you don't tell somebody something?" he asked mournfully, with the distinct feeling that his question would turn out to be a cop-out rather than a first step. "Oh, sure," Foggy said, scooting closer to Matt in his chair, ever ready to console. "There was one time I broke a vase at my aunt's house, and I was so scared she'd find out that I buried the shards in one of her bushes. It ate at me for years." Matt laughed. "This might be a little bigger than a vase." "A doozy, huh?" Foggy said patiently. He waited for Matt to elaborate, but suddenly Matt was finding speech impossible. He sat there with a strained half-smile. He couldn't quite turn into something more or less. It was like he was standing on the edge of a knife. is this about where you went on Sunday, Foggy guess? Matt said, his mouth hanging open stupidly as he calculated the likelihood that Foggy already knew everything, knew what Matt was about to confess, and in that split second, he didn't know whether to feel fear or relief. Before he could settle on one or the other, however, Foggy shocked Matt a second time when he continued, you met a girl, didn't you? You don't have to hide it. He said it with an air of resignation, as though what he was suggesting were some kind of inevitability. Matt didn't know what to do with that. The obvious thing, of course, was to refute it and then tell Foggy the truth. He'd practically handed Matt the in he'd needed on a silver platter, and Matt was, still, bursting with it. The longer he sat there, the more vividly he could imagine his ribs were cracking from the pressure of keeping it inside. There was just one problem. The blaring fire alarm that went off a second later also handed him an out. And the latter option, with the way it tore past the defenses of his skull and commandeered each one of his senses, was harder to ignore, harder to fend off as the weaker of the two. We should... Matt stood up and promptly wobbled on his feet, blood rushing to his head and lending a throbbing organic quality to the alarm blasting in his ears. He threw his arm out for balance and hit Foggy's chest. Whoa there, you okay? Here, Foggy said, first steadying Matt and then grabbing something from his desk. He fit his headphones, the chunky ones he favored whenever he was listening to metal, over Matt's ears before going to put on his jacket. It took Matt another second to get going, not because he'd been dizzy or the headphones had dulled his experience of the world all that much, but because it hit him again, all at once, how lucky he was to have Foggy. And if he kept it to himself for one more night, that was one more night he could be sure to have this, unspoiled. It was selfish, he knew, but he was weak to the urge. Buttoning up his coat, he said nothing. Shall we? Foggy asked, and offered Matt his arm. Matt nodded his assent, and they made for their designated fire exit by way of the staircase nearest their room. Once outside, they joined the huddle with their fellow exiles 50 feet away from the building, where speculation over the identity of whoever had set off the alarm with their burnt popcorn was soon given over to talk of Halloween. Are you guys going to make an appearance at that thing in the campus center? They were asked by an amiable guy named Chris that seemed they only ever ran into at these impromptu fire alarm gatherings. Not sure yet, but maybe we'll see you there, Foggy answered. And Matt realized they'd been so busy with everything else they'd never finalized their plans. Despite Foggy stopping everything he was doing at least twice a day for the past week to regale Matt with a new costume idea, and despite Halloween proper being only 2 days away, law school didn't leave a lot of free time. Foggy turned back to Matt when Chris tried the same question on someone else. That reminds me, though, he said, and paused. If you don't have any plans with your new fling? Matt worried his cane. Inside, still roiling with his own previous inaction, he now seized his opportunity to reverse some of the damage, interjecting, Foggy, there's no girl. Foggy let out a breath, but it came qualified. Okay, well, that's easier, logistically, he said before going on. Marcy was wondering if we should all go together to one of the parties. She said we could hang out beforehand and she'd do my makeup. Matt pulled his jacket tighter around him, his stomach sinking and the cold creeping into his bones. You made plans with Marcy? We were just talking, Foggy said warily. But isn't now a good time to finally cash in on that rain check? Come on, Matt, picture it. The three of us together in one room at last. It'll be glorious. Glorious, Matt repeated skeptically. Come on, Matt, don't make me beg. Foggy clasped his hands over Matt's where they were still gripping the top of his cane. I mean, I'm not above it. I can cajole like the best of them, he said mischievously. Matt was already softening. He didn't need Foggy to make good on the promise of his words, but he listened all the same as Foggy shifted into character for another of his dramatic routines. It's just the transformation, really. Oof, ouch. He began to make exaggerated theater camp moans of pain, his hands leaving Matt's as they went up to his face. My eyes, they're growing, welling up so cutely. Could it be real puppy dog eyes? You're not so cold-hearted as to try to resist them, are you? Because I can assure you, they're as big as saucers. Matt buried his face in his arms in an attempt to keep his snickering from evolving into an outright laugh. You're ridiculous. Foggy sounded satisfied when he said, "Does that mean you're cracking?" Matt sighed through another laugh. How am I supposed to say no, knowing you've got one hell of a corrective plastic surgery waiting for you after all that? It would just be cruel. Patting him on the shoulder, Foggy said, "I'm glad you understand. Now, about costumes. You should wear eyeliner more often, Foggy Bear," Marcy said, as she swiveled him around in her desk chair so he could check himself out in the mirror she'd propped up on the desk. "You look hot." Matt clenched his fist in his hoodie pocket where he sat on Marcy's absent roommate's bed. In the 20 or so minutes since he and Foggy had been led into her dorm room, Matt's primary mode of engagement had been rotating through different muscles to flex whenever he needed to offset a twinge of petty jealousy. Having begun there, he'd already looped back around to his hands after weathering several blows to his ego. Among them, the information that Marcy and Foggy's costumes could just as well have been a couple's costume. Her 80s aerobics instructor to his glam rocker had gone straight to his jaw, while he'd rode out the envy inspired by Marcy's fingers steadying Foggy's face as she did his makeup, with a lap through each of his leg muscles. As fidgety as he was underneath his skin, Matt had been sure to keep his expression neutrally pleasant, even as he dedicated his energy to parsing each word Marcy spoke and each movement she made for signs that what she felt for Foggy was more than friendship. This latest statement had been accompanied by a steady heartbeat in her chest. She'd meant it, and he couldn't even blame her for it. Because Matt knew, deep within his soul, that Foggy was about to be the hottest one at the Halloween party. Probably any of the myriad Halloween parties to be hosted across campus that night. Marcy had let him feel the shimmery old figure skating costume she'd let out for him to wear as a top. And though Matt had never been a fan of the texture created by a swath of sequins, he'd begun to change his tune the second he imagined the fabric clinging to Foggy's torso. As his mind wandered back to it and his nose started to tickle again, Matt asked with some urgency, "Is that offer for a shot of vodka still on the table?" "It's in the mini fridge," Marcy said. She popped open a plastic container of makeup with a fruity scent, a hint of strawberry mixed with citrus, before adding, "It's at the end of that bed you're on, about a foot down the wall." "Thanks." Matt followed the buzzing coming from the unit, focusing on its position in space to make his way to it rather than internalizing Marcy's instructions. Small rebellions would keep him sane. He got out the bottle of vodka from the fridge and had opened his mouth to ask where the cups were when Marcy anticipated him. "There's a stack of cups on the desk to your left." Then, to Foggy, she said, "Keep still." "The brush tickles," he complained as Matt downed his shot. "Matt, your lucky ninjas get to keep half their face covered. I'm having war flashbacks to when Candace got that huge makeup kit for her 10th birthday." Marcy took her hand away from his cheek and leaned back, affronted. Foggy pivoted. "Except Marcy clearly has oodles more skill than my baby sister." He paused. "You think Kiss has any makeup artist openings, or have they been a band so long they only trust the one person?" "You flatter me," Marcy drawled sarcastically. She dipped her brush back into the compact before continuing to dab at Foggy's cheek in fine practice strokes. Matt stepped toward them, holding his empty Dixie cup between his forefinger and thumb as he trailed his other fingers along Marcy's roommate's desk for guidance. The rhythmic scratching of the brush fibers against Foggy's skin drew him in closer. He had no plan for when he'd gotten there. His brain had taken a back seat to the yearning, the desire to take part in a ritual that was closed to him. The red lightning bolt on Foggy's cheek was as out of reach for him as it was at Marcy's fingertips. He didn't have to go looking for the metaphor. It barely was one. Matt stopped at the corner of the desk, hovering a step away from where Foggy sat in Marcy's chair. He leaned against it and rotated his cup in his hands a few times before speaking. "How's it looking?" "Just needs a quick dusting of glitter." Marcy swapped out her makeup case for another one, which she then uncapped with a pop. You can't really move while I'm applying this one, otherwise it'll smudge the whole thing, she warned Foggy. I'll be so still, it'll make my second grade teacher eat every word she ever wrote on my report card, he pledged. Matt snorted lightly. It wasn't difficult to imagine that Foggy had been a handful as a kid, though he didn't know how anyone could have begrudged him his enthusiasm. A few quick rolls of her glitter stick were all it took Marcy to finish up. She dusted off her hands, and in the silence that followed, Matt guessed she was appraising her work. Well, we shouldn't do your hair till you've got the costume on if you want to keep your volume, she said finally. Just be careful not to touch your face, please. Right, I'll go change in the bathroom. Be right back, Foggy said, then grabbed the sequined shirt and the tights he intended to put on under his shorts and headed out of the room, leaving Matt alone with Marcy. Silence fell quickly and heavily. Marcy busied herself putting away her makeup kit, seemingly content to ignore Matt. Matt shifted his weight uncomfortably. The edge of the desk dug into his lower back near his spine in the new position, but he welcomed it. It helped mitigate how alien the fake smile he'd shaped his mouth into felt sitting on his face. A minute passed, Foggy still struggling into his clothes down the hall. No help was on the way. Matt racked his brains for something to say, some subject they had in common that wasn't Foggy. School, though trite, was a safe bet. So, are you ready for the mock trial next week? He asked. Marcy laughed through her nose, a tinkling sort of sound. Matt could feel her eyes on him, studying him. What? He insisted, his nerves transforming readily into irritation. Sorry, I'm just trying to figure out what your deal is, she said, brushing back her hair with her fingers. I know you don't like me, and that's fine, she added quickly before Matt could protest. But you could at least try to have a little fun, you know. You shouldn't punish him for it. He doesn't deserve that. Matt furrowed his brows, the corner of his mouth ticking down. I'm not punishing anybody, he said. Marcy took in a breath, held it for a moment, and then responded, Frankly, I don't know if it's more reassuring or alarming to hear that you think that. You know he's, like, not going to wait around forever, right? Foggy's got a big heart. I mean, we both like him for a reason. He's a great guy. But even great guys have their limits when they're the only one making an effort. Matt's mouth went dry. Marcy's words slid past him, blurred out of focus, but still more than capable of leaving the caustic burn of criticism behind in their wake. I'd kindly ask you to butt out of our friendship, he said acidly. What did Marcy know about him and Foggy, anyway? She couldn't possibly understand how much Matt wanted to be there for Foggy, the same way Foggy was there for him. But there were complications. He'd never asked to have this illness, and he'd never asked to be the third wheel on what was probably on some level a date between his crush and the one person to whom he couldn't compare. The reality was that it was easier for Marcy. She barely had a rival in Matt, and that was probably why she didn't seem to have any qualms about talking down to him. All right, you don't want advice? Fine. But just so you know, I am very comfortable telling you I told you so when things inevitably blow up in your face, Marcy said sweetly. Matt held his tongue. His senses told him Foggy was on his way back, and he didn't have any desire to drag him into his quarrel with Marcy, no matter that it centered on him. It was Halloween after all, and there was no need to ruin Foggy's night, too. A moment later, the door opened with a loud squeak of its hinges, and Foggy strutted into the room, his arms open wide to show off his costume. I dare say I was born a couple decades too late. Am I not the hottest thing since Bret Michaels? He said enthusiastically. You look great, babe. Come here so I can do your hair, Marcy beckoned him. As Foggy went over to Marcy, Matt moved back to the bed with an excuse about hairspray fumes, hoping to restore his mood to its baseline annoyance after its steep dive into more acrimonious territory with a little distance. He still had a whole party together with Marcy to weather after this, and it wouldn't do if Foggy sensed anything amiss. That was the one thing Matt agreed with Marcy about in all of this. Foggy didn't deserve to suffer for Matt's sins. So he would pull himself together and play friendship with Marcy for the next few hours for Foggy's sake, even if he felt like the enormous amount of effort such a thing required might kill him. As Matt soon discovered, a typical Halloween at Columbia involved more ways to die than one. In fact, depending on who you ask, the higher the number of near misses, the more total the night's success. Foggy was ready to cash in early on one such opportunity, if not ascribing to this theory, at least willing to test it out, and, much to Matt's chagrin, accepted a swig of Gandalf's potion barely two steps over the frat house's threshold. There had to have been at least 20 different people's backwash in that flask, Foggs, Matt said, unable to hide his disgust as they left Gandalf and his bottle of liquor behind to join the thick of the party. Never mind that. Where's your Halloween spirit? Do you think Alice Cooper or Ozzy Osbourne would have scoffed at a mere flagon of whiskey that's been passed around a few times? I'm simply honoring my forebears. With a case of mono, Marcy said disdainfully. If you're going to wind up with an STD, at least get some to make it worthwhile. Hey, I eat, sleep, and breathe sex, drugs, and rock and roll, I'll have you know, Foggy objected. Though whether he did so convincingly, Matt thought, was up for debate. Matt patted him on the back to placate him as they moved forward out of the entrance hallway and into a larger living room area. Off in one corner, a girl was bleeding exuberantly into a tuba, accompanied by a guy on the tambourine with shaggy curls and reeking of weed. Their anarchic music illuminated the rest of the room, and the crush of bodies within it, the bass of the tuba seeping into everything. The couch in the middle, camouflaged as it was by a mess of overlapping thighs, revealed itself to Matt from where its wooden legs vibrated against the floor almost imperceptibly. Likewise, he was able to make out a lamp with a loose lampshade, and a glass coffee table housing half the party's plastic cups beside it. And alcohol fumes, the unadulterated strains not yet mixed with their drinker's warm breath, collected over a long table just outside a door leading to a kitchen. "To the booze," Marcy rallied Matt and Foggy with her arm raised, and led them through a throng of people to the alcohol in question. They each grabbed a cup and picked their poison, Matt opting to let Foggy mix him some tequila and Sprite, while he caught snatches of the disparate conversations going on around them. "Yo, Abe Lincoln, my man, what's up?" And Katie smacked the shit out of him. "Don't think you can, like, get addicted to Mucinex, can you?" Strung him up by his underwear. "Need to understand, it's a republic, not a democracy." Matt wrinkled his nose at the last one and turned to Marcy. "What frat did you say this was?" "I didn't," she said, tipping back her head to down her shot before pouring in a replacement. "This is the Federalist Society." Matt gave Marcy a sour look. He'd known some of their more insufferable peers were part of Columbia's chapter of conservative law students, but had been hoping to avoid any run-ins with them as an official group. Thanks to Marcy, all his efforts were now moot. "Relax, Murdoch, this isn't an endorsement. We're here because it's our moral prerogative to drink them out of house and home, drain the coffers a little. So don't be shy, drink up." Foggy handed Matt his cup and, annoyingly unable to argue with Marcy's logic, Matt lowered the bandana he had covering his face to take a sip. "What now?" Foggy asked, as they moved to free up the table for the next group looking to quench their thirst. He didn't wait for them to answer, though, before he added, "I think I saw a Ouija board game going on over there. That could be fun." Marcy whooped in response. "Time to get in the spirit, boys," she said pointedly. A few seconds later, they'd located the game where it was set up on the floor behind the couch. The three of them hung back while they decided the best way to get its current players, Brock and David, to scram. "I've got this. They'll be out in two questions, tops," Marcy assured Matt and Foggy, then stepped forward and dropped down to their classmates' level with a, "Hey, guys!" "Nice costume, Marce," Dave complimented her, and she offered up one of her own regarding his sea captain hat, a lie so smooth Matt was barely able to register it as one. Rubbing shoulders with Brock, she said, "Are you having much luck with the spirits? Because, like, my great-great-great-grandmother, Hestia Stahl, was burned at the Salem witch trials, And I think some of her magic still lives on in my blood. You know, so if you wanted, I could get you into contact with someone really important to answer all your burning questions. Marcy's invented backstory hooked her audience, not known for their discerning faculties, more than handily. "Hey," Brock said, nudging his friend, "what about that Supreme Court justice who died in April? He's still fresh. You don't think it's too soon?" "Well, we need to get someone who's taken their exams this century." "All right, fine, you're right," Dave finally acquiesced, then turned back to Marcy. There was an official bent to his tone as he said, "We would like to summon the esteemed Byron White." "Oh, geez," Foggy said quietly next to Matt. Neither he nor Matt were especially fond of the man who dissented in cases such as Roe v. Wade, not to mention written the majority opinion in court system failures like Bowers v. Hardwick. Matt was curious to see what Marcy would do with him. She cracked her knuckles and invited Brock and David to touch the Ouija board's pointer. When they were in position, she flipped her hair dramatically and chanted, not unlike a priest over the Eucharist during Mass, "Justice Byron White, you will heed this call. We heretofore bind you to our wills and this sacred Ouija board. Answer our questions with precision and without malice." At the end of her incantation, the planchette jumped beneath her fingers. "Whoa," said Brock, pulling his own off of it before reassessing whether he was willing to be known as the resident coward and putting them back beside David and Marcy's. David breathed heavily in anticipation, whatever alcohol he'd consumed still not enough to vanquish his trademark garlic funk. "He's here, isn't he?" "Go on, ask your first question," Marcy prompted them. "Me first," Brock said, rolling his shoulders a few times as if preparing to square off against the dead justice in a physical fight. "All right, Your Honor, I humbly request to know how many questions there will be on our torts final." Matt raised his eyebrows and Foggy snickered into his solo cup. Marcy didn't waver. She guided the planchette slowly, stutteringly, across the board away from her and toward the two boys whose hearts were speeding up. It scratched to a halt, and Brock said indignantly, "Five? That's way too many short essays to write." Marcy shrugged. "Pick it up with Higgins. What's your next question? The justice's time on this plane is limited." David went next. "What grade will I get in Civ Pro?" He puffed up his chest expectantly. Once again, the planchette scraped forward, pivoting slowly back toward Marcy's side of the board, where it stalled in an apparently ambiguous position. "Is that... it's like above the A. Is that an A? Does that count as an A?" David fussed. He and Brock startled when the pointer came back to life again, sliding further to the right. "No, no, no, it's not supposed to move that way," David moaned in horror. "You could still wind up with a D," Brock said unhelpfully, as the planchette continued its slow journey on past the sea. Matt was grateful his ninja mask concealed his growing smirk. No matter how he felt about Marcy and her connection with Foggy, he had to commend her for her effortless manipulation of two of his least favorite classmates. "My life is over," David said, when the planchette at last stopped. Taking off his hat and wiping his brow, he stood up in agitation. "My dad's gonna fucking kill me after he paid all that the tuition. I need to go email the dean right now. Brock?" Brock got up and moved to follow David. "This was starting to wig me out anyway," he said, and they both finally left the three of them to it. The boys joined Marcy on the floor, extending their praises for her quick work in clearing the way for them. Once Foggy'd seated himself, taking Brock's place, he put his cup down on the floor by his knee and wiggled his fingers expectantly. "Who should we conjure up? Thurgood Marshall?" Matt laughed as he took the spot next to him, rolling his eyes. "Absolutely not," he said firmly. "I'm with Matt," Marcy said. "Let's keep it authentic, shall we? Do this the right way. Let the spirit come to us." She moved the planchette back to the center of the board for a clean game, and they each placed their fingers on it. "Is there a spirit here willing to talk to us?" she asked calmly. Foggy held his breath. Matt couldn't tell if he really believed or if, like Marcy, it was all an act. But the tuba had cut out, and the sudden quiet left even him on edge as they waited for someone to take the initiative and nudge the planchette in the direction of the board's yes. It was difficult to say who ultimately broke the impasse, gradually applied pressure from both Foggy and Marcy, and, Matt was sure, his own impatient fingers, eventually pushed the pointer forward until they had an answer. "Sweet," said Foggy. "Who's asking the first question?" Marcy cleared her throat. "I've got one," she said, before lowering her voice to an ominous whisper. "Were you murdered in this house?" Matt snorted involuntarily. "Marcy," Foggy complained, but it left his mouth without consequence. The planchette was already trekking across the board to the no. "Ah, damn," Marcy said. Then she passed the responsibility of the next question on to Matt. For inspiration, he thought back to the time one of his fellow orphans had snuck a Ouija board into the church for a blasphemous seance in the basement. It was one of Matt's better memories from back then. He could still feel the cold of the concrete steps on his feet as he tiptoed down the stairs behind Kyle and Jenny, stifling giggles in order not to alert one of the sisters on watch of their transgression. They'd made it through the night undetected, but the dried wax left behind on the floor from the few stolen candles Jenny had lit for ambiance gave them up the next day. "What year is it?" he asked, recalling Kyle's method for ascertaining when the spirit had died. "Murdoch knows his stuff," Marcy commented, and Matt tried to shove down the odd sense of pride it sparked within him. As the party progressed, he kept having to remind himself more and more why it was he wasn't supposed to like her. They tracked the planchette as it crawled between numbers, Foggy reading each one out for Matt. 1754, eh? Must have been some intrigue around the founding of King's College, Foggy said, referring to Columbia's predecessor. Matt sighed in good-natured reproach. You guys and your murder. Natural death is just so banal, Marcy announced gleefully. Foggy, you're up. Okay. How about, are you and I related? The spirit's response wasn't immediate. I'm a Foggy Nelson, by the way. It took another beat before the planchette made its way back to the yes. All right, Foggy said, taking his hand from the board to pump his fist. We're probably talking to my great-great-great-times-10 grand-cousin. One thing the Nelsons have always had is a shitload of cousins. A family reunion. That's cute, Marcy said, with only a hint of sarcasm. Then, to the spirit, she asked, what's your name? There was laughter as they spelled out Bob on the Ouija board. Good old cousin Bob. Wish I could ask him for all the juicy family secrets, but I'm sure we've got more pressing matters to attend to. You're right, Matt said smugly. Like, for instance, is Foggy going to fail all his finals? Hey! Foggy took his hand off the planchette to elbow Matt, and it sped over to the yes, aided and abetted by a rare showing of teamwork between Matt and Marcy. He huffed at them, propping up an indignant arm with a hand on the meat of his thigh. Now, I know Bob would never slander me so. So that must have been you two. I can't believe you disrespect my ancestor like that, he rebuked them. Clearly I need to show you two how it's done with a proper question. We're waiting, Marcy said, when Foggy had hummed in thought but not produced anything. Hold your horses. This is important, so no interference, okay? Cousin Bob can handle it on his own. Scout's honor, Matt pledged, and Marcy capitulated with a sigh. Foggy took a deep breath, his suddenly quivering diaphragm arousing Matt's curiosity. Whatever this question was, Foggy weighted it with importance. Was there something he was worried about that Matt didn't know of? Was it something to do with Marcy's accusation that he didn't have Foggy's back? Luckily, Matt's speculation was interrupted before his imagination could drag him through its long list of worst-case scenarios. Foggy spoke at last, shattering his train of thought. "Do I have a romantic connection with someone in the room?" Matt knew now why Foggy had seemed so nervous. He didn't think there had ever been a Ouija board question so consequential. Much like Foggy, Matt couldn't possibly have remained unaffected. The fingers he had placed on the planchette itched with sweat. His heart leapt into his throat, and he tugged at the collar of his hood with his free hand. He wondered how Bob might answer if the spirit knew he'd been pining for Foggy since the day they'd met, and recognized the desperation with which he needed him to say yes in his place. And then he realized that he was Bob, that it was his duty to send the message as clear as he could, that Foggy, unless he truly did believe he had Cousin Bob on the other end of the line, was asking something he knew could only be answered for him by one of the two people who dictated the Ouija board's reply. Matt was just about to make his move when he felt Marcy begin to steer the pointer in the same direction. Did she think the question was for her? Worse, what if it was for her? That possibility had been there all along. It wasn't like Matt hadn't been half operating under that assumption all night. But he needed this. It was his chance to provide Foggy with some reassurance while he still hadn't gathered up the courage to tell him everything. An interim measure to make up for asking him to wait. He couldn't let Marcy take it for herself. Matt added pressure to the planchette before it was too late, and it sped towards the yes under his and Marcy's touch. Foggy wheezed out a laugh, covering up what Matt was pretty sure had been a sigh of relief. It was clear enough that Foggy had gotten the answer he'd wanted, but it was impossible to tell from which of them he'd thought it had come. "That's great." Foggy straightened up triumphantly, then picked up his neglected cup of liquor and held it out to be clanked. Marcy obliged him without hesitation, but Matt sat there, waiting to be included by one of Foggy's usual verbal cues. It didn't come. Instead, it seemed as though he and Marcy were communicating silently about Matt, mouthed words and a nod from Marcy in his direction. Matt's heart fell. He bit the inside of his mouth, embraced himself for one of them to announce that he was the newly christened third wheel, or supply him with some half-baked excuse as to why they had to slip off together alone into the party. He thought he might throw up. "I don't feel great," he announced, cutting off Foggy's, "so Matt." Shakily, he felt around on the floor for his cane, then stumbled to his feet. "Bathroom," he said, hoping it would be enough to stop them from following him. He could hear Foggy, delayed by confusion, start after him a little too late to catch him, before he'd lost himself in the crowd. Matt could hardly breathe. He pushed past people talking, shoving himself between them when necessary, and hoping the presence of his cane was enough to excuse the rudeness of his urgency. He made his way to where he'd heard the toilet flush earlier and locked himself inside. He stood, breathing heavily over the sink. Foggy had as good as asked Marcy out in front of him. There had been no consideration for his feelings, not as a potential love interest and not as a friend. Why had Foggy been so insistent that he come? He had plenty of company in Marcy. Matt was nothing more than an afterthought. Had it been from the beginning? The Ouija board had only sealed this as true. So why bother dragging Matt out here as witness? Was he really so clueless as to what he meant to Matt? Matt ran the water and splashed his face. It was only a few days earlier that he'd done the same thing to psych himself up to ask Foggy out himself. He had no plan now, didn't know which way was forward, so he did the best he could and looked backward. He widened out his radar and caught Foggy almost immediately, a few feet beyond the bathroom door. A girl Matt didn't recognize was talking to him. "Just for the record, I think you have everyone else here beat, not only in terms of costume, which is phenom, by the way, but I'm talking sheer sexiness." She leaned in closer to his ear. "I'm good with my tongue if you want to fuck off out of here." Foggy laughed nervously. "I'm flattered, but I'm here with someone." Matt listened for Foggy's heartbeat. It was quick, stressed by the encounter, but it beat true. If there had been reasonable doubt before, there was no longer. He and Marcy had officially become an item, and there was nothing Matt could do to alter the situation. He knew that. It wasn't like Foggy had fallen for Marcy on purpose or to spite Matt. It was just the way things had shaken out. But knowing this and feeling this were two different things. And right now, Matt couldn't tell where his physical form ended and his feelings began. He felt like he was spilling over, like one of his nosebleeds had gotten out of hand, and no matter how hard he tried to staunch the flow, the blood just kept coming, liter after liter. There was a relentless ache in his throat, an expanding hollowness in his chest, an all-encompassing need to, if not be loved, at least be seen. Matt ripped off his hood and tugged his bandana loose. He squeezed his eyes shut, a habit he'd never quite managed to shake, and let himself imagine without any of the limitations he'd come to place on himself. None of the reservations with which he normally approached the Foggy in his mind. He let himself desire, open and freely. The girl who'd hit on Foggy was his way in. He was in her place, his hand lingering at the base of Foggy's neck. He pulled him in closer, the heat of his own breath rebounding back at him from the shell of Foggy's ear as he leaned in to whisper how good he'd make Foggy feel. How he'd take him away from the party to somewhere quiet, just the two of them. Run his hands down his body, trace the seams on his costume, feather light till he had Foggy begging to touch him, really touch him, and Matt would oblige. He'd pin Foggy between his knees, nip at his neck to set him squirming, panting, drunk on Matt. He'd have his full attention as he teased Foggy's thighs apart, gripped them hard as he repositioned himself, kissed him on the mouth and elsewhere. He'd never let him go, and Foggy wouldn't want him to leave. Matt's face flushed with fever. He held on tight to the cool porcelain of the bathroom sink as a wave of dizziness overtook him. The alcohol in his system was fighting valiantly, but there was a limit to what it could hold back when truly pushed, and Matt was pushing. He threw himself into the daydream until he heard ghostly moans echoing off the walls, tasted Foggy's sweat on the breeze, could swear he felt phantom hands caressing his face. The levees were holding under Matt's assault on them, but only barely. And then came a knock on the door. "Matt, are you okay in there?" Foggy's voice, his real voice, tinged with concern. And then Marcy's. "Murdoch?" The fantasy came crashing down, and like a tidal wave, it breached the alcohol's last defenses. It happened quickly. A faint splash as the first drop of blood hit the rim of the sink, the inside of his mouth gone metallic and bitter. More than the pitter-patter of a rainstorm picking up momentum. The back of his wrist gone slick where he'd given his face one perfunctory, futile wipe. A flow now as steady as it was relentless, bound up in a longing that stretched past the ends of the earth and anchored itself in twin seas of sorrow. Matt started crying, his chest heaving as he hiccuped through both tears and blood. He'd wanted Foggy to see him like this, to fret over him. But he was no longer so sure opening the door to Foggy's increasingly insistent knocks wouldn't do anything other than turn all the sympathy Foggy had ever shown him into ash. The routine of it had to be growing stale. Matt bled. Foggy cleaned it up. This had to have been part of what Marcy had meant. Matt was draining Foggy as surely as each of his nosebleeds drained him. If he was as committed to Foggy as Foggy had been to him, maybe things could have been different. Maybe he could have been the one to lay claim to the happy ending. But that wasn't how it had gone. Matt was clinging onto the sink, his knees buckling as the blood went out of him. He was growing weak, was losing the fight against the urge to slump down onto the floor. It was tile. There were harder surfaces to clean. And Matt was tired. His energy was flagging. If he could just rest for a moment, lay his head against the wall, he could rally. Foggy was banging on the door, rattling the knob. Matt wanted to tell him it was okay. The bleeding would stop soon, and he'd clean it up on his own. Foggy didn't have to worry. Matt couldn't get the words out, though. He coughed, the blood coating his throat. It was slippery and sticky, like his fingers as he tried, uncoordinated, to press his bandana up against his nose. Matt shivered. He'd never realized just how cold and hard to heat the campus buildings were with their high ceilings. The banging stopped. It was replaced with something metal, scraping, turning, a curse word, some bickering Matt couldn't follow, the crack of his side of the doorknob falling and hitting the floor tile, the door swinging open. There was a shriek, a cell phone dialing, a hand slapping life back into his cheek, a towel pressed up against his nose. "Come on, Matt, you can't do this to me." Silence. Sleep. Matt faded back in by degrees. Beep, 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 beep. Tick, 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 tick. Ba-dum, 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 ba-dum. Disinfectant. Laundry starch. Saline. Foggy's deodorant, newly applied. How long had he been here? Matt licked his cracked lips, tried to swallow, and got nowhere. "Water," he said hoarsely. "Oh, good. You're awake." There was something wrong. Foggy didn't sound happy. His vowels were taut, his words clipped. He didn't rush to Matt's bedside. When he got up from his chair, it was marked by the sluggishness of obligation. "Can you sit up?" he said through a sigh. He handed Matt a plastic cup with a lid and a straw and waited for him to drink. Matt gave it back with a thanks. There was something palpable between them, something he could tell Foggy was itching to say. He didn't think he'd want to hear it. For a moment, he considered feigning having fallen back asleep, but the way Foggy was grinding his teeth as he chose his next words made Matt think he'd need far more than a little extra time to forget whatever it was that he wanted to say. "They said you went into hypovolemic shock. That's when your body starts shutting down from blood loss." Foggy left the information there for Matt to do with it what he would. He hadn't thrown him a softball. It wasn't easy like a question would have been. If someone asked you a question, you knew they wanted an answer. A naked statement like this was anything but transparent. "Oh," Matt said, acknowledging it was the best he could do. "Yeah," Foggy said knowingly. Matt listened to Foggy's heart propel blood through his veins with ever-increasing vigor. They were approaching what he'd been working himself up to. Matt swallowed. "Looks like your epistaxis mortis wasn't anything to worry about after all," Foggy said, his voice shaking with barely tempered anger. Matt went cold. He didn't know how it hadn't occurred to him that his secret couldn't have possibly remained safe in the hospital where they had his records. Foggy must have overheard a doctor or a nurse discussing his treatment. In the end, it didn't matter how he'd found out, only that he had. There was no taking back that Matt had lied to him. But maybe he could salvage things if he could just explain. At least tell Foggy he'd never imagined he'd wind up in the hospital. Matt rushed to push himself up into a sitting position from which he could better argue his case. The IV stuck in his arm pinched him as he moved, and he flinched. "Foggy, I didn't know..." "You didn't know what, Matt?" Foggy said, cutting him off with venom. "That I'd find out? Because let me tell you something. The first words out of your mouth when you woke up should have been, 'I'm sorry, Foggy, for lying to you this whole fucking year.' But no, not even after he dragged his ass to the hospital, on the train, sweating bullets because they wouldn't let him ride along in the ambulance, does it seem like a good idea to let your best friend know your real diagnosis? Instead, he had to find out from the chart they left at the foot of your bed. But sure, you didn't know. None of this is your fault. There was nothing you could have done differently." Matt reeled from the blow of Foggy's words. He had to steady himself with the plastic guardrail of his hospital bed before speaking. "I'm sorry. I was going to tell you," he said meekly, knowing it wouldn't be enough. Foggy shook his head contemptuously as he said, I'm not even going to ask when that was supposed to be. He went over to where his bag was leaning against the visitor's chair and unzipped it. His back to Matt, he breathed in shakily, then said quietly, "You know, I told the EMTs the wrong thing. One of them actually told me to not hold out too much hope of resuscitation if my info was right. You have no idea how scared I was." Before Matt could say he was sorry again, Foggy had reached into his backpack and pulled something out, which he wasted no time in chucking at Matt. The knobbly plastic of his Michelangelo figure hit him square in the jaw. "I grabbed this for you when I went home for a change of clothes. Figured he could keep you company better than a bouquet of smelly flowers. He's gonna have to do the heavy lifting now, because frankly, I don't think I can be around you." "Get well, Matt," Foggy said, and, after slinging his backpack over his shoulder, walked out of the room. He took all the air in Matt's lungs with him. End chapter 7.